Welcome to Electronically Yours with Martin Ware.
Hi, it's Martin here, Electronically Yours, as always. Today's very interesting episode features someone I wasn't aware of, to be honest, but I was made aware of him by one of our podcast listeners, and I am so thrilled that that has happened. His name is Harold Grosskopf. He's a bit of a kind of underground legend in the electronic music scene. He has performed with many famous German, I don't like the term krautrock, but krautrock groups in the 70s, including Tangerine Dream, Klaus Schulze, Asherah Temple, many others, and performed live with them as well. He was one of the first people credited with playing live drums over sequencers. So, I think you'll enjoy this one, particularly if you're a bit of a synth geek like I am. Here he is, Harold Grosskopf. I mean, I'm so impressed with your body of work, I have to say. And your influences are a lot of my influences, I have to say, as well.
We weren't aware of this fact for a very long time, you know, that you people, you know, from Human League, Heaven 70s, and so on, were had a great ear on our music in those times.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we used to listen to, Can Amon Dul, Faust, Neu.
Oh, yeah.
In Sheffield, you know, because it's an industrial town. It kind of, if you excuse the pun, it resonated with us because of the kind of, firstly, it was daring, but secondly, it did sound kind of industrial, the music, and kind of mechanistic, you know. And so when we had the chance to combine that with our general love of futurism, and then you end up with a love of sequences, which is obviously something that's very important to you. And electronic music and so on. But anyway, let's start at the beginning. So did you grow up in near Cologne?
No, I grew up near Hanover.
Right.
A little town like 10,000 inhabitants.
Right.
Together with, the Schenker guys, you know, from the Scorpions.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
so that's why you played with them in the first place, is that right?
Yeah, you can call it, you know, I sometimes replaced the drummer when he was ill, you know, maybe two or three times. But I wanted to join them after I worked in hospital instead of military service. And we had a meeting, and it didn't work for three times. Then I said, "Oh, come on, fuck you," you know. And I'm not so keen with their music. But anyway, the huge success. Anyway, I went to school with Rudolf for 2 years, and in kindergarten when I was
very little.
Yeah.
And so, when did you? I mean, were you musically trained?
No. I still can't read notes. You know, I just do it, you know.
Neither can I.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. Totally self-taught, yeah.
I met the guys from Orchestra Maneuver in the Dark 3 years ago, and we had a chat about that, and that's really surprising me, you know. And, that's a cool thing, yeah.
It goes to show for me that musical intelligence is nothing to do with manuscript or...
Very, very, very
visual representation. It's to do with intuition and something that's very deep in our DNA, probably inherited through ancestral memory, I think.
Yeah, I'm happy that I had connection to these roots, you know.
Yeah.
I still have even more than ever, you know. I really loved making music, no matter what comes out in the end, you know.
It doesn't matter, the process.
Yeah, the process is...
It's the equivalent of the Buddhist, the journey is the destination, you know. The process is the song.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And I can hear that in your music, you know. Because
thank you.
I've listened... God, I must have listened to Synthesist.
Yeah, wow.
What an album that is. I mean, it's so far ahead of its time.
Well,
it sounds contemporary now.
I tell you how it started, you know. I until I made synths, I was a drummer, you know, and I,
yeah.
You know, and somebody told me, why don't you make a solo record? And I said, you know, who wants to listen to drum solos for half an hour, you know? And he said, oh, you know, no, I mean, you recorded with Klaus Schulze and Ashra, and why don't you do it with synths? I said, I don't have any idea about synths. I'm a drummer, you know? And then he said, I know you have a 8-track reel-to-reel recorder, and I have a couple of synths. Come to my home. You can stay there as long as you want. And as an exchange, I get your 8-track recorder. And that's what I did. So I sat there, you know, stoned, dead stoned all the time, coffee for 6 weeks. And I laid down the basics. And it was so much fun. And in those times, I was not secure whether my emotional experience I had in those times could be shared by anyone, you know. So I was very insecure, and in those times, you know, record sales could be very high. Like my expectation was like 100,000, you know.
Yeah.
Very naive, I know, but and I just sold 10,000, so I thought, oh Jesus, nobody's caring about synthesis. And it took 10 years, you know, that it came across the world. And since I'm connected with the internet, I get so many response on that album that that's a great, great feeling, you know.
Well, your efforts were not wasted, because I could see quite a lot of well, first of all, it's extremely musical. Then you've got this interesting thing. There's like, you know, apart from the sequences, there's rhythm involved. There's a kind of beautifully naive, melodic thing going on the lead lines. But it's not meant to be an insult, by the way. It's like pure in that sense.
I definitely see it that way too. You know, I was naive, you know. And I hope I didn't lose this naivety, you know.
Yeah, it's difficult to keep it. So with the Human League, we went through a similar kind of naive process, because obviously we were just experimenting. And we put out a record called The Dignity of Labour, which was, reminds me a little bit of Synthesis, actually. Not yours.
Wow.
Yours is much denser. Ours is much more. It's only got four or five components, probably. But yours sounds like more like a leaning towards the Klaus Schulze end of this beautiful, epic soundscape kind of thing. So halfway between Tangerine Dream and kind of Dignity of Labour. But I felt a kindred spirit when I was listening to that, and so. One second, my wife's calling me, of course.
Okay,
darling, I'm just in a Zoom call, so I'll see you in a bit, darling. Bye. Sorry, we like local colour in the podcast. Probably keep that in. it's just a pity we didn't know each other at that point.
Yeah.
Because I think what might have come about had we met you at that point, it might be interesting.
Because I was sitting in my Berlin flat, you know, almost no money, you know, and I recognized your success in the pop charts and stuff, and I said, how did they do that? You know, I liked it, but I was sort of jealous too. You know what I said?
Yeah, I know the feeling. We felt the same way about OMD, you know.
I see.
Yeah, but I mean, I left the band after the first two albums, so I wasn't part of Dare or anything. But the first two albums are more experimental, which is quite similar to your kind of thing. It's more in more, you know, obviously there's vocals and traditional song structures. But
reminds me to Kraftwerk's first albums, which I
yes
like more than that what they'd done in the later, you know.
Yeah, they were kind of hippies, weren't they, really?
In the yeah. I met them in, I don't know, 71, 72, small festival. They played at the end, and most people left the event because they couldn't cope with that. They had long hair and strange equipment on stage, you know.
Right. Like, what kind of equipment?
I think maybe, I don't know whether MOOCs did. Yeah, I think the mini MOOC was existing. I just was astonished. What is that, you know, in those times? My first contact with a mini MOOC was at the Dirk Studios, where we could record all that stuff.
Right.
And it was on the table. I said, wow, what a machine. And then I asked, yeah, it's connected. You can, and then, you know, the ADSR,
yeah.
And in my mind, I had, you know, to get volume, you got to turn a knob from left to right, you know.
Yes.
So I did that with the Attack, you know. Nothing came out. I said, fucking machine, you know. yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
And then I had a sampling machine, you know, the Emu, the first Emu. I thought, wow, interesting machine, because
Emulator One was it?
Yeah, Emulator One, and
I have the Emulator Two. Yeah,
and I mixed upload and download, you know, and that's what the machine is fucked, because all my work. And then I wanted to bring it back to the shop until I found out, Jesus, you know, well, yeah.
What I loved about I bought, or rather the band bought, a Roland System 100, the modular machine, and
yeah.
Which is a beautiful thing. And I've still got it, in fact, use it all the time. And in the manual, which was kind of written for people, they were kind of selling it to people who owned home organs, you know?
Yeah.
They were trying to, it was like a kind of novelty thing almost. So the manual was really interesting because it was written in layman's terms.
Because
for the general public, and it had one key saying on the front. It said, "No illegal connections."
Yeah.
So it meant you could fuck around as much as you want without breaking it.
That's cool. That's cool.
And I think that's a very important thing, and it taught me to just, you know, to experiment and allow for randomness in your process. And that's where the beauty is. That meniscus between planning, or rather aiming for something and missing by a million miles and getting something better.
Yeah, yeah. That reminds me when I first, you know, when Klaus Schulze introduced me to the huge MOOC machine, you know, the four, I think, P15 system. And we went into his basement, very simple room, you know, and he switched on the sequencer, and I got thrilled. I got goosebumps, you know, because, you know, the groove was so touching that I was looking around, said, oh, where's a drum kit, you know, and then he didn't have one. So I was taking a blue plastic casket and started drumming on that. And it created a smile in Schulze's face, you know, and he said, next record, you're on, you know.
Wow. And that's
how Moon Dawn was done, you know.
Yeah. Great.
That was such a... And Moon Dawn, like I was used to with my rock band, you know, rehearsing, but we never had these emotional density than in the later bands, and so I was insecure because I wasn't a very, you know, I was not so much trained in improvising music, you know.
Neither was I. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you know, he came one day late, so I had to stay in Frankfurt, and the studio was so incredibly tiny. I was completely disappointed. Because he had already achieved a lot of success. And I said, why is he working in such a tiny studio? Until I found out they have made it by themselves, the guys, you know.
Wow.
And everything was in mint condition, you know. That's why he recorded there, you know. And they loved the music. So even if it was small, it was very, very, the entire atmosphere, you know, was fantastic. Anyway, so the third day of the night, we started playing. And for me, it was very unusual that somebody is putting his instrument in the control room. And that's what Schulze did, you know. And so I sat in my drum cabin, you know, and I couldn't see him. So we started, and 3 minutes later, you know, the music stopped, and then we came together, you know, and talked about it. And then he said, "Oh, I feel that everything is fine. Let's start again." And then 25 minutes, no emotional break, no technical hassle. It was, and then it finished, and we met in the control room and hugged each other, and that was Mundo. Oh.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
My God, when that magic happens, it's quite a rare thing, isn't it?
75, 74, something like that, yeah.
Good Lord. Yeah, I'd bought my first stylophone then.
Oh, actually, I have a stylophone, you know, because it's been reproduced, you know, in Hastings, you know. We got, you know, Eberhard Kranemann, you know, we recorded an album in 2017 together. He was the founder of Kraftwerk, you know.
Right.
And he left the band before they recorded, you know, because he had a family to feed and he had to earn money. So, I mean, they didn't earn money in those times. And the two main guys, you know, when we came, I had a rich family background, you know. Yeah. Handmade shoes, suits, everything. And that's why they had so easy access to all the synthesizers later on. Anyway, we were invited by Dubček, I don't know, the factory who was reproducing the stylophone, you know.
Yeah, Dubček.
Yeah, Dubček, yeah. Yes. And nice people who were invited, and then they arranged a small gig in the cellar of a wine store there in Hastings. It was packed, and it was really nice.
Yeah, I had one of the dual stylophones.
Yeah, wow.
50, I think it was, and it had a light sensor for wah-wah and volume.
Wow.
Yeah. And I thought I was Eno at that point, but I wasn't, of course. Yeah. It wasn't until much later that I started buying synthesizers. But I just want to go back to the I don't really like the term krautrock. I think it sounds a little disrespectful, but to the range of people that you knew and worked with at that time. So, I mean, Tangerine Dream, of course, and Klaus Schulze, but what really fascinates me is Ashrar.
Yeah.
And so tell me about that experience.
We first met in the Dirk Studios. I think they made the last record where Klaus was involved. You know, I think it called Join In, that record. And we bumped into each other, and I was, you know, their behavior was so much different than in the rock bands I experienced, you know, open, friendly, and I really liked that. And I don't know. And then I was invited for a Ashrar Temple record called Ashrar Temple Joining Rosie, you know. Mm-hmm. That was the girlfriend of Manuel Götzsching. She now lives since 82 in New York, and we met in 2011. That was a nice... Anyway, so that was my first involvement. And then, to tell the truth, the first record of Klaus called Irrlicht, you know, like Twilight, yeah, I didn't like so much. It was very kind of intellectual, you know. A year or 2 years later, I was laying in bed, and there was this radio station, and they played this wonderful, sequences, melodies, But I missed the beginning. So, and then the guy said, "That's a new record of Klaus Schulze." Wow, what is that? And immediately, because I didn't have a phone, you know, I wrote him a letter and said, "Klaus, wow, I'm impressed," you know. And then he said, "Visit me," you know. And that's where we met. And then Moondawn was the result.
Fantastic.
Yeah, but
I'm such an admirer of his work. Yeah.
Yeah, but back to Ashra, yeah. You know. And after that, I couldn't do rock music anymore. I was bored, you know, by the 4/4 beat and blah blah blah, all the you know, the same harmonies. And then how could I do a step forward? And so I split from the band without having any other perspectives. And during that time, I got a letter from Florian Fricke, you know, from Popol Vuh, you know. And he said, "Oh, I heard you left the band, and I'm looking for a drummer because my companion, Daniel Fichescher, who was a drummer and a guitarist at the same time, can't do that on stage, you know." So I went there with my drum kit, but I wasn't used to soft music, you know. He just had a piano and Daniel, a very, very small guitar amplifier. It was almost radio volume, you know. And I mean, as a rock drummer, I couldn't cope with that. So, and unfortunately, I have to leave. I was very frustrated. But a couple of days later, Manuel visited me on his way back from a France tour. And then he said, "Oh, you know, join Ashra, you know." And a short time later, I moved to Berlin and joined Ashra.
Wow. And how long were you with them?
You know, we didn't constantly perform, or, you know, there were huge gaps in between. I wasn't used to that, you know. The rock band, we were active, you know, rehearsing every week. And with Ashra, you know, it took sometimes months, nothing. And then a France tour or an album. And that's why I was a little bit bored. And that's why somebody said, "Why don't you make a solo record?" And then Synthesis came in between. And so there was jumping in for back and forward. And then, you know, we never really split up, yeah, but we never really said, you know, "We're now a band and this is the only thing we do." And so there was a huge gap. And in between, Manuel became an alcohol addict, you know, really. So he was very, very badly attached, you know. And and then he asked me, "Let's do a." He was invited to make a tour in Japan, 4 gigs in Japan. That was in 1997.
Right.
And I thought, "Oh Jesus, you know, we can't do it the way we did it in the 70s, you know, like including 5-minute gaps before he, you know, rearranged the sequencer for the next piece, you know."
Right.
And I had met a young colleague who was very, very much into, you know, sampling and stuff. And I said, "Oh, this will be the perfect guy, you know, to join the band to prepare loops and so we can improvise and that." And that happened. So we did this nice tour in Japan and it was great success. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. So you've done 7 solo albums now, is that correct?
It could be, yeah.
So how does it work? Do you work on them on your own? Do you get different musicians for every album? Do you?
Yeah, most of the time I do it alone. You know, I'm a great fan of, you know, VST. If you have good quality VST synths, I really like that, you know.
Yeah.
That's how I work. I have a very tiny studio with great equipment, and I constantly work. And last year, I was so lucky to bump into someone who was a collector of analog studio equipment, you know, highest quality. He's an electronic engineer, and he brought everything to mint quality, you know, I can send you when I'm back home. I send you a picture of the studio, and he, as far as it's not commercial, he loved that somebody is, you know, respecting his work and the studio. Oh. And so what I do, I'm recording stems, you know, from the different tracks, and I'm sending it to him, and then we put it via a huge Studer console and record it on a two-track Nagra machine. He owns, wow, 15 reel-to-reel from 24, 12, 8. You can't imagine. I'm at least, I don't know, 8 million euros of what? Value. All of it. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You could work there. He would love it, you know.
Oh, sounds great. What? What impresses me about your stuff is the hypnotic nature of it. And I presume, you know, we all grew up you're a little bit older than me, but grew up in the 70s where drugs were where it was at, in the post hippie times. Well, to a certain extent, you know. And we were kind of discovering this fantastic world of, I suppose, looking back on it, you call it progressive rock or but it's more, yeah, than that. It was more like a kind of trance music, which went on to influence a lot of electronic music in the,
yeah.
So
yeah,
tell, yeah, me what your thoughts are about your, I know it sounds terribly egotistical, but about your influence on your music's influence on the forthcoming trend in the 80s. So.
You know, like when techno appeared, you know, I was old already, you know, so I didn't go into clubs, you know, I didn't feel comfortable, you know, being above my 40s. And then, you know, yeah, you know, that's why techno just, you know, passed me. And then I met this guy whom we took with Ashra to you know, Steve Baltus, and he introduced me to techno, you know. And at the same time, there was a Berlin School Festival in the Netherlands, and there was this young guy. He was a promoter for Sven Veit, you know.
Yeah.
And his label. And he said, "Did you know how much your music influenced techno?" I said, no. So I went there, and I was complete. I really liked that, what they did, you know. And but I was never on the trip to say, okay, this is now the trend and I will do that, because I wasn't able to. In the end of the, or in the mid of the 90s, techno already reached its peak, you know.
Yeah.
They were kind of very, some narrow-minded too, you know. If you didn't use the Roland, yeah, 808, you know, then it was not techno, you know. They're much more open these days.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was fascinated, but I never came to the conclusion to copy things like that, you know. Anyway, I like our influence, and it's great to hear.
I think there's a certain improvisational quality to the stuff that you were doing.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And emotional, too.
More in common with kind of, to a certain extent, Eastern music and Indian music, and, you know, that kind of hypnotic.
Putting you
into a trance state. I hear the trend towards trance music. When it came along, and the attitude of crazes of trance music was a very simplistic view of what trance was, whereas your stuff is much more kind of ethereal and optimistic, as far as I'm concerned. And I think what's missing from a lot of techno now, it's become very hard-edged, a lot of it, and I think there's a certain nuance about the sort of stuff you're doing, which is much more attractive to my ear. What do you think about
that? To tell you the truth, I don't listen very much to music. I'm very open, but I don't check record stores for new music. I'm waiting that it happens to me, that it comes to me by young people. And so maybe that. So I kept my naivety a little bit, you know, in my own bubble, and I love that. You know, it's.
Do you mentor anyone in do you have young artists that you advise or play with?
I would, but that didn't happen yet. But I would, you know, definitely, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so the thing is, you know, we are so connected with the internet. We're overfloated by information. That and everything seemed to be done already, you know. Every styles are mixed and stuff. So a new music will have it very hard to come through. But I believe in artistry, you know, and there will be somebody who is very original and unique. But I'm open to any new things, you know.
I'm putting the word out to the podcast listeners, because I know a lot of young and old composers would be interested. So there you go. So, okay, let's think about this then. So do you remember a film called The Warriors? Did you ever see that film? Oh, okay. There was a composer called Barry DeVorzon, who composed in a composing electronic soundtrack for a film. It's about gang wars in New York, and it's one of my favorite film soundtracks. And it reminded me of your work.
Wow!
I asked, and I just wondered if you've ever been asked to do any film scores.
I was asked last year. There was a British production with some Hollywood actors. And hopefully it will work, you know. I forgot the title, you know, because, you know, sometimes they kick it out 2 weeks before, you know, the film has an end cut. But right. I was that would be the first bigger ones. In the 80s, I did small ones. And I have an Australian friend living in L.A. He's a director. And he's doing very crazy, trashy, wonderful films, and I sometimes give music to him, you know.
Yes, I think I find your music very evocative, so I think it would work very well with, you know, working to picture. So, and you still perform all over the world, is that true?
Yeah, I performed with this Eberhard Kranemann, the founder of Kraftwerk. We performed in China, which was an incredible experience. And yeah, we performed in 2018. We performed in Shenzhen, China, you know, a festival that was great, you know. I was astonished about how modern this part of China was, and nice restaurants, nicely dressed people, and good food, and the technique was overwhelming, you know. The service behind stage was great, you know, nice, friendly people, and the audience, you know, there was nobody elder than 25, you know.
Wow.
And they cheered at us, and then I had tears in my eyes when we said goodbye. That was a great experience.
The power of music, eh? I mean, people you would never expect. And that's amazing. I mean, I think your music is timeless, I think. So, and it has influenced people like Underworld, I believe, and people like that. And
Underworld, I love them.
You
know, I detected them, you know, via this contact of the label of Sven Fate, you know. They said, did you hear Underworld? I said, oh, I don't know. They perform in Cologne. Go there. And I did, and I was blown away.
She's
a great fan of Underworld. And we saw them twice, you know. Great. You know, it has parts that reminds me to Tangerine Dream, and more techno, and very entertaining too, and just great, you know. Yeah.
And Of all the groups that you've worked with, which do you feel most embodies your kind of view on music? I mean, you know, which is your favorite, in other words, you know?
Yeah,
is there a band that you've not played with from that period that maybe you wish you had?
I really liked working with Ashra in those times, and Schulze. Schulze was a very individual guy, you know. He's not really a team spirit for a long period, you know. That was a disappointment for me, because I expected, now, you know, we're the guys and we tour everywhere. We only performed twice and made four records together. And I found that a pity that it didn't continue. But I think he was this very individual character. I'm very emotional on stage, and maybe this is just a guess.
Maybe he was worried about you upstaging him.
Yeah, I go like, wah, you know? And that probably would take his show part of his. I don't know. It's just a guess.
Just as a matter of interest, which synthesizers did you use on Synthesis, and which ones
it was,
did you prefer?
Yeah, I had a core. It was, as I said, borrowed, a core 3200 or 400, I'm not sure, and a mini Moog and an ARP sequencer.
Right, and that was it.
That was it, yeah.
Amazing.
But the basics were on that. And the problem was, there was no MIDI existing. So, and I had the idea, you know, to have at least two or three sequences running parallel. That didn't work. So accidentally, in that same house, there was a guy who was starting to build his own synth equipment. He's now living in Portugal and building Moog-like equipment, high quality. Anyway, he created a cable, and with the help of that cable, I could create a wave on one of the tracks, you know. So it's some kind of
a carrier
formation. Yes, you know, and vice versa, I could trigger the sequencer again, you know.
Yeah, and that's what we used to use before MIDI came along.
And with Ashra, I pressed the knobs by hand, you know. Ding, 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 ding.
No!
Or
wow.
By hand, you know. There was this knob where you could trigger step by step, and on correlation, I did that several times, you know.
Wow. I went to see, a long time ago, maybe 30 years ago, I went to see Philip Glass. Right in the middle of his newfound fame with Glassworks and kind of Scatzy and all that, and I went to see him perform live, and I could not believe that he had I think five keyboard players, and they all played the sequences live.
Wow.
I'm going, why are you doing that? It's pointless. Just plug him into MIDIs after MIDI. We're literally playing everything live and to manuscript. And I thought,
wow.
Yeah.
I was very lucky, together with Klaus Schulze, I think it was 74, 75, a friend of ours who was involved in the Koyaanisqatsi film, you know, and Michael Hoenig, Michael Hoenig.
Yeah.
He was playing, but and with Orton Whalepool, who was the director of Koyaanisqatsi. Michael arranged a music festival with music from Bali, you know, gamelan music, and you know, the minimal musician Steve Reich, you know, and we were invited to watch a night rehearsal of Steve Reich, you know.
Wow, I love Steve Reich.
Brilliant. Music for 16 musicians, I guess, We were blown away, you know. It sounded completely electronic, but it wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
It was so a great idea. And I think this was our main influences, you know, the American minimalists, you know.
I think so. I think it's kind of like technology that became available from the mid-70s onwards sort of caught up with the minimalist theories. So I always, this has been great. I always end our conversations on the podcast with a series of stupid questions. So so let's start with the stupid questions. It's kind of like, you know, pop magazine questions. What's your favorite TV show?
My favorite TV show was Little Britain. Yeah, Little Britain is, you know, my wife's sitting there, she's smiling. We love that. You know, we just introduced that to our American friends here. They don't know that. We love that. It was just great, you know.
Yeah, it was very funny. Yeah. What's your favorite film?
My favorite film. Oh, wow. My favorite film. I like Hitchcock films, like The Birds, for example. Yeah. Many films. I'm a film geek, you know. I love films. You know, because that was a sort of cheap, you know, a cheap entrance into art, you know. Very, very good films.
Exactly. I'm lucky enough to be part of the member of BAFTA in Britain, where we vote on, you know, it's like the Oscars in America.
And yeah. Oh, yeah.
I get a preview of like 300 films every November, and get to, and they ask you to vote on them. So, yeah, I'm pretty.
That's it reminds me to my friend Philip Mora, the director I was mentioned, Australia, now living in LA, in the house of Cary Grant. That's where he stays. You know?
Really?
Yeah, and he's a part of the Academy, you know.
Oh yeah.
So he's, yeah. Like you, he's getting hundreds of films that he has to make cross. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What's your favorite book?
My favorite book, I think Henry Miller, a couple of books of Henry Miller. I really like them very much.
Yeah, very, very good writer. Fantastic writer. If you had if you'd have had an alternative career, what do you think it might have been? Away from
Maybe. I was fascinated being a medical doctor, you know.
Right.
Because you know, as a substitute for military service, I did it in hospitals, and I was fascinated. But I didn't have the education to do that, and so I preferred to do music.
All right, okay, that's good answer.
My friend here, Barry Gorskov, he's a medical doctor, he's a psychologist, his wife too. An amazing conversation here, very dense conversation. It's in this environment, I'm blown away every minute. What an experience.
You're a man who clearly enjoys life, so I love that. Do you have any unfulfilled ambitions?
Wow. Not really. No, I think I do what I wanted to do all my life.
Right. That's a lucky thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
I feel the same. Yeah. Which I'm always curious about people who I think have got a spiritual aspect to the music. I always ask them what visual artist is their favorite, because I'm really convinced that the of this synesthetic connection with the visual world, you know.
I had as a guest, an English university teacher for virtual reality, you know.
Right.
I like that, you know, and, you know, laser and 3D projection,
yeah.
Stuff like that. If I would have more money, I would really create very crazy things, because that stuff's very intense. And I have very many ambitions, but I like to be more concentrated on making music, you know. I'm very keen with Photoshop, and you know, there's the video thing, and you know, you have to be somehow focused on one thing, otherwise you can't get anything together, you know.
Exactly. My cat's trying to get involved in the conversation. So.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, my cat Vito is, of all the music that I played for research for all the different artists that I've interviewed, he likes yours best.
Wow.
He was sat there transfixed for the entire album of The Synthesist.
Greetings to that cat.
Ah, Vito. Vito, come here. No, he's not a dog.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
He's called Vito Corleone.
One question, your name, is it Martin or is it Martin? Martin, Martin. Regular?
Martin. We're Martin with a Y. So.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But, so I thought it was Martin or something.
No, it's not. It's not pronounced differently. But, and the final question, what is your favorite synthesizer?
It's still the Mini Moog, you know.
Right.
It's the Mini Moog, and I had one. I found it, you know, getting on stage and into airplanes too heavy. But I have a very nice VST version of it, you know.
Right, I've got it's the called, same thing, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they're very nice copies, you know, virtual copies of it. But it's because it's so simple, you know, and I get very easy and fast the result I want. Because modern instruments, you know, this tendency of new analog synthesizers, you know, I found that they get more and more complicated. Maybe my brain's not.
We're getting simpler and they're getting more complicated.
That's right, yeah.
Here is Vito. Hold on.
Oh, Vito. Hi.
Vito, say hello. Say hello. Well, he's not having it. No, but there you go. He's not having it. It's been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for taking time out of your holiday. I appreciate it.
It's been really a great pleasure. Overwhelmed. Martin, whenever I go to London, I will contact you.
Oh, please call me and we'll go and shoot the breeze or have a bite.
Maybe we could arrange, you know, via the internet, working together somehow. And I love that. I have I met somebody. His name is Ramon Amezcua. He's a very well-known techno geek, and he has a band called Nortec. You know, it's a funny mixture of techno and mariachi music. You know,
wow, and I love mariachi music.
Yeah, and this combination is so nice, and they're very successful. Like since last April, at least 200 gigs until now. You know.
What?
And we wanted to do a second record. We issued one with the Rolling Stones of Mexico, fantastic reactions, and we wanted to do a second one. But his timetable is so full, and I hope I can go to Mexico and
Mexico
with him together.
Mexico City is my favorite city on earth. I think it's brilliant.
Wow,
the people are fantastic. Yes, Vito. Shut up. He's chasing a fly. It's all right.
Okay.
What a joy. And please call me when you, or email me when you get to London.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd love to meet up and talk some more.
When I'm back home, I'll send you my data, you know, telephone and stuff. Yeah.
Let's do that.
It was a great pleasure talking to you.
Thanks, man. Have a lovely evening.
Have a good time.
Or morning, or whatever it is.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
This is early morning.
Bye.
Harold, what an interesting guy. His album, Synthesist, is amazing. And I was playing it in advance of doing the interview, and my cat, Vito, was sat there transfixed. He absolutely adored it. It's very hypnotic and quite, what can I say, it was quite seminal in terms of influencing groups like Underworld, which we mentioned, and many others as well. But that kind of hypnotic trance kind of stuff with live instruments kind of goes back to this, and it's really beautiful. It's got elements of almost like Vangelis-like stuff, but also Barry DeVos on, who I mentioned, who did the soundtrack for The Warriors in the 70s. Reminds me a bit of that. How is everyone? Some holidays coming up. No doubt some of you will be listening to this and the other recent podcasts, maybe catching up on some of them when you're away. And hope you're enjoying them. If you are enjoying them, consider contributing towards the patreon.com/electronicallyhours site, where for the price of a cup of coffee or a pint of beer per month, you can help keep this podcast free of adverts, totally independent, and free for everyone, really. You can email me about ideas for the podcast or anything else you want to on electronicallymartin@gmail.com. Have a great week. Another great guest next week. Goodbye.
This is from Richard Smart. Hi, Martin. Loved the John Robb episode and totally get and understand his geographical take on seaside awareness. Growing up in Rhyl, a seaside town in North Wales. When I moved to London, it was weird not having a promenade on the seaside. It was great to hear his take on it. Great 70s punk, goth and glam stories. Just great. Many thanks, Richard Smart. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, Richard. This is from Anton. Right. It's from Anton. Just wanted to show my appreciation for the EY podcast, listening in my car, blah, blah. It's great to hear the inside stories of so many heroes. I especially loved the recent interview with Robin Scott. Anyway, well done. In terms of suggestions for future guests, how about Martin Gore? Good idea. Neil Tennant or Wolfgang Fluhr? All good ideas.
Martin Gore.
Take a note.
Wolfgang.
Miss Stuke.
Fleur.
And get off my knee. I recently released my latest album, Notes from a Dream State, a collection of electronic instrument pieces, and would love for you to hear it if you have some time. Send it to me. Influenced by many of your guests, I'm proud of how it's come together and some of the positive reviews. Oh, there is a link here, actually. So I will come back to that if you write that down.
And this guy says he can put you in touch with Wolfgang.
Can he? Okay.
That's what he says here.
Okay, so. Cool. Then so be it.
Cool.
This
is from one of our patrons, Roger Shepherd. Martin, the Toya show was magnificent. I've heard other interviews with her, but you managed to bring out her vulnerability and humanity. Keep up the good work, Roger.
Thanks, Roger.
Thanks, Roger.
This is André Landeros Michel. Good afternoon, Mr. Ware. Can't tell you enough how much I've enjoyed. Blah, blah, that's very kind of you. He's a pattern fashion designer, cutter. Been a huge fan of M17 since I was 11. I voted for you on Scream of the Week on WLIR radio station on Long Island several times back in 82, 83. 11 years old. I would love to make a few suggestions for upcoming guests. David Frank, The System, absolutely would love that. I can connect you with him via Facebook if you like. Take a note of that, definitely. I'm a big fan of The System. Nick Rhodes, again, we are contemporaries. I would love to do him, so note that down as well. Green Guard Side Scritty, I've asked him several times. He's an old mate, but he's, I don't know, he seems to have gone off. He goes off grid from time to time. Peter Byrne, Naked Eyes. Don't really know about Naked Eyes, I'm afraid. Robin Guthrie, Cocteau Twins. I'm very happy with Cocteau Twins. Would love to do that. So that's a good idea too. Thank you for all that. If you ever begin to tour again, be honoured to dress you.
Oh, that's cool.
And your bandmates for performances in my brand
Landeros,
New York.
That's cool.
Oh my God. Listen, we have to have a look at that on the internet. Thank you so much, André, a creative director designer for Landeros, West 38th Street. Sweet.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks, André.
We'll come back to you on that one.